Welcome to the Pro Photographer Journey Podcast, your resource for building the photography business of your dreams. This is Shamira Young, bringing you tips, business strategies, and interviews with award-winning photographers. We're all in this together. Let's get to the good stuff. Hey everybody, I'm here with travel and corporate lifestyle photographer Simon Plant. Now, Simon is based out of the UK, but works nationally and internationally for a wide range of clients. Now, when Simon reached out to me asking to be on the show and sent along his portfolio, there was no way I could pass him up because, Simon, your work is outstanding. How are you?
I'm very well. It's good to speak to you. Thanks for the introduction.
You know, I meant every word, and looking through your portfolio at your travel lifestyle and your corporate lifestyle images and the natural expressions on people's faces and the composite work that you mentioned you do, I really want to dig into the nuts and bolts of your business.
Yeah.
But the very first thing that I always want to ask my guest, because I've checked out your work and looked at, you know, your about page and your background, but I'm assuming for the benefit of our listeners that they haven't. So could you give us an overview of yourself and how you ended up doing what you're doing today?
Oh, how long have you got? I'll try and condense it down as quickly as possible. You asked me how I just sort of stumbled into photography.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. So my dad was quite an avid amateur photographer, and I'm going back now to the sort of 80s when I was a young lad, and there was always this wonderful camera equipment lying around the house. And I think I was about 14. A friend of mine said he was always sort of skipping around wondering what he was going to do when he left school. And, you know, one thing, he wanted to be an airline pilot, and then he wanted to be something else. And then one day he says, oh, I'm going to be a photographer. Yeah, he said, you get to take pictures, you know, of really attractive models on, you know, glorious beaches. And I thought, yeah, that sounds all right. And I bought myself a little camera, and I dabbled for a while, but it was a bit of a fad, and I kind of ended up moving on to something else. But as I got older, when I was at school, I got interested in scooters, and I don't know if you know what I'm talking about. They're Italian Vespas and Lambretta scooters. Mm-hmm. There was a bit of a scene that was building around that time with mods, which was very much a 60s thing, but it was a bit of a revival. And a lot of my friends were into that, and so I got interested in that. And to cut a long story short, I decided when I was about 17 I wanted to build a show scooter, something to show in custom shows. Mm-hmm. And I had an interest, again, on the back of my dad, in Greek mythology. So I decided, because I was building a scooter, I wanted a bit of inspiration. And so I went to Greece for about a week, visiting a lot of the old archaeological sites, you know, the Acropolis, Marathon, and lots of different places like that. And I borrowed my dad's camera. And this camera was an old Canon, and it was very large, and the zoom lens had a 70, I think it was a 28 to 70 mil lens on it. But by those standards back then, it was absolutely massive. So I was walking around Greece with this great big camera, and everybody was like looking at it and admiring this camera. And it made me feel really good. It made me feel like, you know, really important. And I think that was the catalyst. I think I came back, the pictures were awful. But I came back from Greece. But at the same time, because the scene was still growing at the time, there was a magazine got launched, a national magazine called Scooterin. And being a bit naive and thought I knew everything, I decided to approach them about me doing some pictures for the magazine. And before I knew it, I was starting to get paid to go to some of the events that I was going to anyway. And I thought, this is great. I was getting paid to take pictures and going to places that I was going to anyway. So that's kind of how it all started. And it went on from there. And I decided, I was looking through a magazine one day in the late 80s, and I saw some photography by a chap called John Claridge, who is a very, very well-known photographer in the UK, a commercial photographer, a brilliant, brilliant photographer. And I was just mesmerized. And that was it. I had to learn how to take pictures like John Claridge. And I enrolled in a home study course with the New York Institute of Photography, which was a correspondence course back then. They sent you all these great big package full of training material, and you submit little assignments to your photo editor via the post. There's no internet back then, and you get a little tape back, audio tape with, you know, with the review of your work. And I did that, and that's how what taught me the fundamentals of photography. And that was it, really. It rolled on from there, and I eventually went to professional in about 1990.
And now, when you say you learn the fundamentals of photography from the New York Institute of Photography, which you've had on the show before, I'm assuming that would be composition, lighting, etc.
Yeah, I mean, again, it was a lot of stuff was black and white, so there was a section I think on black and white, on f-stop, shutter speeds, and the whole thing, and the composition, the different lenses and what they did, just the very, very basics, which are still relevant very much today. And it slightly annoys me when I see people online saying, you don't need to know about f-stops and shutter speeds. Well, you don't have to, but if you want to do this for a living, you need to learn your craft.
You know, and I'm going to try to hold myself back from ranting here, but, you know, I completely agree. And that is one of the most interesting, but often frustrating things about being a photographer today, because it's so easy to purchase an entry-level DSLR and start shooting and call yourself a photographer. But I'm so glad that you highlighted that you learned the basics, you learned the fundamentals, because so many people, you know, I've seen people with cameras more expensive than my own, and they'll pull it out of the fancy new case and say, you know, I just bought this camera, I just spent thousands on it, and I don't know what to do with it. Or I only shoot on auto. I mean, you've got to learn. And that's one of the key things, I think, that really, among other, you know, traits, but that's one of the keys for distinguishing yourself as a professional.
Exactly. As I mentioned, I think, before we started the show, I used to do a lot of training. And, you know, that's a thing. You can go down the road and buy a camera, stick a battery in it, and take some great pictures. But it's only when you master the camera that you can start to get creative and start to produce really good work. So, you know, learn to read the histogram and stuff. It's so very important. Even if you're not looking to be a professional, just to be able to master the camera and know what you're doing with it, it's a great feeling, because it's not controlling you, you're controlling it, and it means that you can start making creative decisions.
Absolutely.
So I'm very pleased and very glad I was brought up in the time I did and had to learn the fundamentals, because it would be very easy not to bother. But and also, you know, less so, I learned how to develop film and how printing works. I used to do a lot of Cibachrome printing, which was printing from transparencies. And, you know, it teaches you a lot. Teaches you a lot about the whole photographic process.
Yes, and just so our listeners, you know, I hope they don't think I'm picking on anyone. And I'll just, even to prove that, I mean, just use myself as an example. When I first started shooting, I didn't learn how to use lighting for the longest time, as far as controlling your light as an art form. And I mean, I was on auto for the longest time. And I've made no secret on the show that I've made every mistake in the book, shooting-wise and business-wise. But let me tell you,
only way to learn.
Oh my goodness. Yeah, peanut butter and jelly sandwiches and macaroni and cheese, trying to run my business the wrong way, charging next to nothing. And, you know, but you learn. And let me tell you, for any listeners who have, if you have not explored learning how to use the fundamentals with your camera and control your lighting, it will revolutionize your work and make it twice as fun.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, once you start to realize how to master the camera, then, like I said, you've got full control and you can start making creative decisions then, rather than just kind of reacting and just pointing and shooting the camera. So it's a big thing. And I didn't use lighting for a long time. I had lights, but because I didn't really know what I was doing, I sort of avoided and used natural light. But I still don't use a huge amount of lighting. I mean, a lot of my work now, I use natural lighting, but I do supplement the natural light with flash because especially if I want sunlight in the shot, I'm trying to, obviously I do a lot of composite work, so I may have a scene and a photograph which has got the backlit, so instead of going to a studio and kind of doing it that way and trying to emulate natural soft light, I think you're better off, you know, if you want natural soft light, then I think you should go and use natural soft light and make life a bit easier for you rather than trying to wing it. And I know that a lot of people say, oh, you can emulate that in a studio. But in my experience, perhaps I'm being fussy, you can't. But no, I'm still not a huge user of flash. But again, if you're doing it professionally, there's times when you need to do that, you know. So you have to learn all these things, really, just to make sure that you're current and you can obviously meet any challenges that come your way on a shoot.
Absolutely. So, okay, so you took the home study course with the New York Institute of Photography, and from there, what did you do from how did you start building your business?
Okay, I was very lucky at the time, and for your American listeners, this probably won't make any sense at all, but we had a thing called the Prince's Youth Business Trust. So the Prince of Wales, the Queen's son, had a trust which helped young entrepreneurs. So you could apply for a grant for the Prince's Youth Business Trust, and they gave you £1,000 towards equipment, whatever that might be. If you're a chef, it might be knives, I don't know, and if you're a decorator, a painter, there might be, you know, might go into brushes or towards a van. I obviously used it towards camera equipment. They also gave you £1,000 loan. It was a very, very low rate loan to help you launch your business, and I also had something else from the government. It was called the Government Enterprise Allowance Scheme, which again was to help young people start their own businesses. So those were real help. They got me a leg up, and then it was just a very, very awkward approach of knocking on doors. Mm. Now back when I was a youngster, and I suppose this applies to a lot of youngsters, I did have a lot of self confidence, and I was quite intimidated on knocking on people's doors and handing them a leaflet. But I soon realised that if I didn't do it, I wasn't going to get any work. So it was just a matter of just jumping in with both feet. And looking back now, I think obviously the work I was producing and, you know, the sort of people I was approaching, it's surprised I got any work, but I did. And, I was doing a lot of landscape work back then. And, you know, I'd go out and, you know, take pictures. I would take notes, I've still got all my notebooks, lots and lots of notes about the settings I was using to help me learn more and more. And if I had a mistake, I could backtrack and work out, well, what did I do wrong? So you say about making mistakes, it's the only way to learn. But as long as you learn from those mistakes and you don't do it on a job, then it's a good thing, you know? So yeah, it was just literally just both feet, jumping in with both feet and getting going. But it did get to a stage, I was about a year in, and I did a job. No, actually, it was about 12 months in. I approached a company called Clark Shoes. Now, again, won't mean a lot to if you're based in the States, but Clark Shoes, they are operating in the States now. They're a shoe shop, so they're a big company here. They're based not far from me, and I decided I was going to go in and try and get some work, which again, it was a bit crazy looking back. But I went in and I took in loads of pictures of landscapes, which is exactly what you need to show if you're trying to get a shoe client. But that's all I had. And to my amazement, they offered me a job there and then, and with a couple of models, and you know, I had to build a shop front in a studio to replicate a shot that they've seen in London, in Oxford Street. And that kind of launched me, and that went really well. And all of a sudden, I was photographing male models on location for Clark Shoes, for their sort of action sandal wear line. And I did quite a bit of work for a while. So that was my very big first break, and it came very, very quickly. And like I said, looking back now, some of the things I was doing, I'm thinking, God, how did I get away with that? But, you know, it all worked out quite well. But not long after that, I did another job, and it went quite horribly wrong. But the people were very nice. They were professionals. They were actually a designer, an ad agency, but they were doing a bit of private work. And they were obviously doing things on a budget, and obviously I was cheap. But I did the job, and at the end of the shoot, it all came out well in the end. They said, look, we know this really, really great photographer, and we think it'd be really good for you to go and sort of maybe assist him for a day. Would you like to go and see him? And I said, well, yeah, okay. So I went up to this photographer and introduced myself, and he had the most amazing studio. It was an old rectory, old English rectory, and a big bar and these two studios in it. And it was like a real smack in the face. I realized very quickly I knew absolutely nothing. And it was just so happens he was one of his assistants was leaving, and he offered me the job. He said, you know, did I want to sort of stay on? And, you know, so I put my business on hold and went to work for him for about 9 months. And we shot everything from door knockers to food to cars, and even got the chance to go to St. James's Palace in London and photograph the Queen's cousin.
Oh, that's cool.
So that was quite an experience. So, but it didn't last very long. I got itchy feet. I'm not one for studio work and being closed in a studio. And although it wasn't all studio work, I just wanted to go back and be on my own again. So I decided I knew I needed to learn more, but I decided time was up net then, and I wanted to move on and go back to do my own stuff, which is what I did. But I knew it was a bit. I could have stayed with him for a couple of years; it would have done me good, but I didn't. So,
so I'm curious. Yeah. I guess what would be one of the how do I word this? What's one of the main lessons you learned while you were assisting that photographer? Is there anything that stood out to you that you really picked up?
Don't kick the tripod when you set all the camera up, because that was something I used to do all the time. He said to somebody once, I was like a baby. They're like babies, because we set this great 5-4 camera up, very precise, and then I'd walk along and I'd kick it. You'd have to set it all up again. So I think what was an eye-opener was that this was a really kind of a big business, and you know, you can't just wing stuff like I was doing. I didn't really know what I was doing, and it made me realize I didn't know what I was doing, and things. Yeah, I think that was the main takeaway from that. That was what sort of made me realize I don't know enough yet. I'm out on my own, town for business, but I know nothing. So, yeah, I don't think there was just one takeaway. I think it was just like an avalanche of them, really.
And for our listeners, if you haven't assisted another photographer or just stood in the background and watched another photographer work in studio, I highly encourage you to do that. And I'm so glad that you mentioned that you assisted Simon, even putting your business on hold for 9 months, because I think that was priceless. And I know when I first started, absolutely. I mean, having the benefit, I was working at a motorcycle magazine, and I got the chance because we would shoot our covers in-house. So we'd fly in models, put them on a motorcycle, a sweet-looking custom motorcycle, a chopper, and spend the next 6 hours often shooting, you know, to get a certain number of images for the cover, and then the inside spreads. And I got the opportunity to watch a team at work, and eventually I got a camera and started to help a little bit with some of the side shots. But you know, it is hard to sum up. It's so valuable, but there's so many components that go into a successful shoot. And you're right, you can't fly by the seat of your pants. I mean, the preparation, it's a lot.
Well, in the big studio, they were building sets, and then, you know, you do your test shots, then you'd have to get a motorbike courier in to come and take the film to get the processing done for the test shots. Mm-hmm. And once you were happy with the test shots, then you could actually shoot the actual product. And then you would leave the setup for another day until the final film got back so you could check it. So it was a long-winded process, and you couldn't just sort of go slap, bang, wallop. It was a very, you know, it was a lot of money at stake, and it was very precise and very calculated, and it was what I was doing was kind of almost like winging it a little bit. And it was just a big eye-opener. It was a big wake-up call for me. I mean, I knew I still needed a lot to learn, but it made me realize, you know, I've gone out on my own and set myself as a photographer, but I know nothing, you know, absolutely nothing. So it was good for me, and I should have stayed for a lot longer than I did. But me being me, just got itchy feet and thought I knew better, and moved on.
Well, you know, 9 months is a good chunk of time, and I want to make sure you give yourself enough credit. And so I want to highlight something else that you said, or rather a common thread I'm picking up during our chat, is that, Simon, it seems that you're not afraid to approach people or companies. You mentioned that you approached the shoe company, and all you had was landscape photos, which I'm amazed as well.
Duh.
I'm amazed too that they hired you. But I mean, even before that, you said you knocked on doors. And I think today, and I realize, you know, it's a different time today, but at the same time, that face-to-face interaction and not being afraid to put yourself out there, or even picking up the phone and making a phone call, I think that's important. I think it's easy to want to hide behind the computer today, or social media, or send out work, you know, and then a lot of people wonder why they don't get a response. A lot of times you have to put yourself out there and make the phone call to show up to the networking meeting or knock on the business's door.
Yeah.
You know, and just go for it.
Well, all the work, I mean, bear in mind, I've been brought up with photography. I've been doing this for 30 odd years now. It is a different time now, completely different time. Mm-hmm. There's a lot more advantages now, I think, as well, a lot more opportunity. But the problem is, I think you've got to put yourself in other people's shoes. And just, I do this a lot. And I think it's just something I naturally do. I've always done it. And, you know, if you're an art editor or a creative director or an art buyer, you're not just receiving an email from me. You're receiving probably 50 emails a day. Mm-hmm. You're probably receiving 50 to 100 mailers a day landing on your desk. Now, there's no way you're going to be able to compete. You'll be lucky if if they actually open what you send them. Yeah. You know, so you've got and trying to email people and get a response or phoning people. Very, very, very rarely do I ever get through to the person on the phone. I have to try perhaps 3, 4, 5 times. Mm. And still then I don't always get through. I've just changed my approach now. And I wasn't going to mention this, but I'm going to tell you what I do. I decided, you're right, this business, all the work that I've got, well, 90% of the work I've got is from people who have actually met and mm-hmm. I've had face-to-face meetings with. And as I said, that's not easy these days. I've been sending that mail since I've sort of gone down the travel lifestyle route. I've been mailing now for about nearly a year, different companies. Some people I've got through to and spoke. If they're an agency, you've got very little chance of actually getting anybody on the phone. So what I've done now to get my kind of personality across and get some face-to-face time, I started videoing and sending video messages to each person. Now, this is very time-consuming, and this is one of the things when I did my training site, I did about 100 odd training videos and did a lot of presenting to camera. So I've kind of got used to present. I'm not saying I'm great at it, but I've got used to presenting and being in front of the camera. And, you know, and I've learned I'd never script anything. I just kind of ad lib, and that's the best way of doing it, in my opinion. And I thought, well, what a great way to, you know, I've done all that work. It was a great way it lasted, but I got fed up of doing the training, if I'm honest. Mm-hmm. I've learned quite a lot from that, and I'm taking that forward now. So what I did, I thought, right, what I'm going to do, I've rung this person 5 times, I've emailed 6 times. All I want to know is it okay for me to keep in touch, or is what I'm sending you completely irrelevant? And I'm trying to take people off my database, because I have these mailers made by a chap in the state called Bob Fuller, who's got a company called Brandon Bullseye, and he did all the promotions for Joel Grimes, who I'm sure you know, Joel. Mm-hmm. Joel, he's everywhere, and they're quite expensive. Well, they're not expensive, but they're obviously, I've got a certain amount to send out, and I've been sending quite a lot out, and I'm thinking I don't want to be sending these out if the person receiving them have got no use for it, but they're not replying to me. So I'm thinking, right, I'm going to change my approach. So now what I've just started to do is I started to do a little video clip. So I set the camera up, so nice lighting, and I just present, and I just send a video, a 90-second video. I put their name on the front of the video so they know exactly directed towards them. And I just say, hi, so-and-so, forgive my unorthodox approach. Just a quick follow-up. I sent you one of my mailers, and I showed them the mailer. Been in touch now for about 9 months. I just would like to keep in touch if I may. But however, I've tried to call you. I know you're really busy. And so just want to know, if you don't wish me to carry on keeping in touch, just find me a quick email back, and I won't trouble you any further. So it's somewhere along that line. Now, no one so far has replied, take me off the mailing list. So I can only presume that's a good sign. You know, so it's not foolproof, but the important thing is I'm getting a little bit of face-to-face time with them. Right. You know, being a great photographer is a given. You've got to be presenting the kind of work that they're looking to buy. Mm-hmm. And they've got to know that you're not a raving lunatic. and hopefully, you know, you're not. And you've got a bit of a connection. And I think by being yourself on camera, they're either going to like you or they're not. And, you know, but as I said, so far, I can't say it's been a success because it's too early to say. But I know the videos are getting watched. and I know I'm getting in front of the people. Okay, it's not a two-way conversation, but they're getting to know my face a little bit. So I'm hoping at some point it's the next step is obviously get in and see them and show my book.
So it sounds like you just started doing this. Have you gotten any responses yet? Or are you just able to see that they're watching the videos?
I've just got statistics, you know, from, I know they're being watched. I know they're being watched. Certain videos are being watched. But I haven't had any response to say, yeah, thanks for the video. Yeah, please don't bother us again. That hasn't happened yet. So I can only presume from that that keep on mailing because they like what they're seeing. They're just not ready to commission what I've got, what I'm offering at the moment. So I'm the eternal optimist. So you know, I always look on the bright side of things. So but like I said, you know, you need to get feedback. You don't want to be wasting. Previous to this, for 3 or 4 years, I was mailing 1,000 cards out every 3 months to a select group of people. I mean, it's still a lot of cards, 1,000 people, still a lot. And then one day I woke up and thinking, really, I should have had at least a callback by now or some kind of, you know, an estimate or something. And I just realized I was not getting any kind of response. And I'd given it a lot of time, so I knew I had to change my approach. And I also decided to niche down even further and just concentrate on the work that I really was passionate about doing. And I love travel. I love photographing people. So that's why I just specialize in the travel and corporate lifestyle work now.
So with the travel and corporate lifestyle photography, how did you get those clients? I'm assuming this is before you started doing the video.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, I started out with Clark Shoes, and that was very much people-based work, lifestyle work. And I suppose that was what set it all off. I had no aspirations to be kind of a lifestyle photographer, but with the Clark stuff, that's the sort of stuff I was shooting. And then kind of over the years, I've done all sorts. And then for a couple of years, I was on a retainer to shoot sports and prestige cars. Nice. And I was one of the first photographers in the UK doing CGI photography for the HCR rendering of cars. And so that was a new thing that I came up through, and then I kind of that kind of went by the wayside, and then I just decided, you know what, I want to go back to shooting people again, and locations. So I've done, but the same creative director that I was shooting the cars with, he also moved on. And he was more in the IT email security business, and for a big American company. And I started working with him doing shooting business lifestyle for that company, and doing worldwide global campaigns. So, and I enjoyed that. So that's why I kind of have carried on doing a lot of corporate work. The travel stuff, again, it goes back to me loving shooting landscapes, but I don't enjoy just shooting landscapes on their own so much anymore. I like doing the composite work. So, you know, there's a picture on my website of a set of windmills, these three windmills on this beautiful cliff, it's shot in Turkey. I had a home in Turkey for about 10 years, and every year I go. And my friends that I'd met there said, "Oh, have you been to photograph the windmills? They're beautiful." And one year I borrowed a car and said, "Yeah, I'm going to go and photograph the windmills, and I'm actually going to do a video tutorial on what I'm photographing and what I do with the images." And I arrived at these windmills, and they were like very, very shoddy. I was very disappointed. I thought they were going to be absolutely beautiful, and they were a bit run down. So, and there was this beautiful bay behind and these mountains, and you couldn't see them because the windmills were right in the way. So what I did is I photographed the background of the mountains separately, and I actually moved them up in the background so you could see them. And I took out one of the shoddy windmills, and I restored some of the sails on the one windmill, and the video was called Moving Mountains, I think. Moving Mountains, I think it was. So I love photographing locations, but they're not always kind of straightforward documentary pictures. They're my kind of idyllic viewpoint of what I thought these windmills should have looked like. I end up having to create that, what I expected to see, because they weren't what I expected. I was a bit disappointed. So I love showing an idyllic moments as opposed to photographing just what's in front of me.
And I'm looking through your the places, the portfolio called Places on your on your website. I mean, the work is stunning. Now, are these you going out on your own and taking the images, or do you have a specific client that you're shooting for?
It depends. Some of these, like the fourth one along, which is like this spooky looking house. I was in Holland doing a shoot for Knorr, which is they do food products for chefs and a lot of sort of stuff for the public as well, but a big company. And I had a whole day before I had to fly back to the UK, so I went on a little boat trip and took my camera, and I just kind of snapped that from the boat. The next one, which was shot in Paris, I was there. I was shortlisted for a big campaign for Nissan. This is when I was shooting cars, and I had to go to Paris for a meeting with the agency. And I stayed on for a few days, and I photographed some pictures for myself. Most of them are either on the back of assignments or their personal work.
Excellent.
The trouble with landscape photography, I used to do a lot of stock photography and did very well out of that for a while. But, you know, they're not, it's horrible to say, but shooting landscapes is a hard business because, you know, stock photography is inundated with pictures of locations. That's not to say if you had a certain viewpoint and a certain style that stood out, you couldn't sell the images. It's just they're not, to me, landscape photography is not very viable on its own commercially, unless there's maybe, you know, a car in a shot, or maybe it's people based. And this is why I did the cars for a while, and obviously that went more towards the CGI. And then now I've sort of gone back to shooting people, but I shoot people within the landscape as opposed to just landscapes. For the commercial angle. Obviously, from a personal point of view, then obviously, you know, it's I do it for enjoyment, you know.
Okay, and you know, you mentioned the style. I wanted to touch on that for a bit. You mentioned that if you have a style that stands out, that can work to your advantage, basically. And so I'm curious, because you're right. I mean, with not just stock photography, but all of the different genres of photography, I mean, there's a sea. There are millions of photographers, a sea of photographers these days. Do you have any tips for how we can get our work to stand out as far as having a personal style of our own?
I think they're one of the same thing. I think you've got to put the hours in. When I was shooting in the early days, you went to a client and you might shoot some products for them, and then the following week you might get another phone call and they had a job, you know, photographing something on location. You didn't tend to specialize. You're a good photographer. You prove yourself to somebody, and they'd use you for everything. Things have changed a lot now. I think it was about 1995 where I realized I needed to have a bit of a shake-up, and I needed some advice. I needed somebody from the outside to advise me. And I stumbled across a lady at the time. Her name was Selena Oppenheim. And she was a creative consultant, which was something I've never even heard of, based in New York City. And I got chatting to her, and she was a really interesting lady. She was telling me all about, you know, you've got to have a visual style, and, you know, things were changing, and people had to obviously specialize. And, you know, America's always slightly ahead of the game in certain aspects. And this was something that wasn't really something that was known in the UK at that point. And, you know, I took her advice and understand a lot of it. Ended up going in a couple of books she wrote. One was called Portfolios That Sell. And then she changed her name to Selena Matreya, and she produced a book called How to Succeed in Commercial Photography. And they're great books, well worth a look. And I had to kind of basically print out pictures, or to pick out pictures that I loved. Don't think any more of it than that. Just pick out pictures you love, and you spread them out. This is how she told me to do it. You spread them out, and you start to analyze each one, and you get a pen, and you mark down what you liked about a picture. So for me, I found that I really love color photography. I'm not much into black and white photography, so I love sort of the coloring of certain images. So I would mark that down, all the pictures that had certain coloring. I'd then mark down, it might be a landscape, so I'd mark down how many pictures were landscapes, and then I'd mark out how many images used a wide angle lens and how many images were like had a more of a compressed feel. And I did this several times, and at the end I analyzed all the data I had, and I realized how I photographed, and I'd never done it before, and it was the most amazing thing I did. It was a hard work, and I realized that I liked tranquil moments in my pictures. I didn't take a lot of big, fast-paced action pictures. I didn't use a lot of wide-angle lenses because, obviously, again, you know, if we use wide-angle lens in a certain way, you can get a very graphic feel to them. And I wasn't into that. I realized that I liked slightly more compressed pictures, and I did, and I liked color in my images. And slowly, I worked out what floated in my boat. And then I started to shoot images. Now I knew I could shoot images in that manner and build up a bit more of a style to my pictures. And I think it's an ongoing thing. I think you naturally evolve as you do this more and more. You naturally evolve your style. But that's how I evolved. And then you apply that to a certain genre of photography. Maybe you enjoy photographing horses. If you bring your personal style that you love to photographing something else you love, then that's going to be your best work, and hopefully you can find a market for that and push that style of work onto that market and get known for it. So that in a nutshell is generally how I think, you know, you develop it. But it takes time. You can't just suddenly buy a camera and start shooting and do it. You need to explore and work out, you know, what you're all about, what you love.
You know, I think that's one of the best answers I've had to that question on the show. That's so cool how you laid that out. I mean, and you're right, it does take time. We're flooded with images these days, but I love how the way you're saying it, it's you're essentially using that to your advantage. So you're taking the time of looking through images and breaking down why you like particular images, right? So you're not copying off of the person, but you can certainly use other photos to inspire you.
I mean, John Claridge, as I said, I mentioned earlier, it was a big influence influence on me, and obviously that work now is, I suppose, by some people it'd be quite dated, but there's still elements of it that I took on board that are probably in my images. I'm not copying them. I've just taken the best bits that I like from different people's work, influence, and I'm molding them. And influence is that, exactly that. So, and then I'm just applying it to things that inspire me. And obviously, I'm looking at my website now, and I go on here sometimes. And I'm thinking, oh my God, I've got another picture with a sea in it, and I seem to have a lot of pictures with water in. And I'm thinking, I've got to start shooting more in the forest or somewhere else. But again, that's what draws me. I'm drawn to the coast. I love the sea, and that's what I'm drawn to photographing. So I shouldn't really apologize for it. You just got to follow your passions and photograph what you love in a way that you love shooting. And a lot of the landscapes that I shoot, I've just come back from Spain, as I said, and some of the landscapes I shot there, a lot of them aren't just one shot. Because I don't like using wide angles, I'll tend to use longer lenses. So to get the kind of width in the image, I'm taking 18 pictures of the scene and stitching them all together to get the panoramic look to it. But that's the only way I can get the kind of perspective that I want. So, you know, they're not all straightforward one shot pictures. There's a lot of work goes into making them look the way they do.
Totally. How cool. So, Simon, I'm curious, do you have any tips for any photographers listening who might want to break into travel and or corporate lifestyle photography?
Non-specific to those genres. I think the advice I would give would apply to any photography, and some of it would apply to anything in life. I think you've got to save your time. I think you know you've got to be a great photographer. That's a given. If you're going to go after work, your work has got to be great. But you know, we all see photographic campaigns. I speak to a lot of people, and we all do it. We see a campaign, we're thinking, I would love to have shot that, and you look at the work, you're thinking, oh my God, I'd much better than that. And why they use that? Because it's not all about what you can do. It's all about the marketing. And I think my advice to somebody would be, make sure that you learn how to do your marketing. You've got to be consistent with it. You've got to be quite, I don't want to use the word aggressive, but you've got to grow a thick skin. You know, I'm quite sensitive when I was younger. Now I don't care. I'll ring up, you know, Virgin, British Airways, you know, all these big companies, and try and get people on the phone. And I don't really too worry about rejection now, because, you know, I know they get a lot of calls, and, you know, I'm in it for the long game. I'm not looking for a yes straight away. I just want to keep my name and my work in front of people. And, you know, you've got to be consistent. There's no point doing a bit and then leaving it 6 months and doing a bit and then leaving it. You've got to be, you know, either not seeing every month, but maybe every quarter, sending stuff in the post so that you've got an excuse to call them or try and call them. And it's just about that follow-up. And eventually, hopefully, if they like what you're doing, eventually you may get a foot in the door to go and see them and go from there and hopefully get some work. But it's not, you know, you've got to be in the long game. It's a very, very competitive industry. It always has been, but it's even worse now. And, you know, it's quite a lonely business at times, and it's quite an emotional business. I mean, photography's had me jumping for joy. And it's also had me in tears. Mm. You know, it's a it can be a really emotional life. And, you know, it's often feast or famine.
Yes.
I mean, I've done jobs. I've photographed 6 pictures in a day and got paid £30,000 for it because of the rights that's being used. It's a worldwide campaign, and I've also done jobs and I've earned, you know, pretty much pennies. You know, so you've got to take the rough and the smooth. You no point saying I'm only going to do these big campaigns because you'll do them maybe once a month or every 3 months, but in between you still need to kind of have that bit of cash flow. So I think you've also got to be prepared to do other work which may be not as glamorous to fill in those lean times, because we all will have them. It's the nature of freelancing.
You know, it really is. And I think one thing that listeners have to really remember is that, especially when you're trying to get into corporate photography or working with a business in general, shooting images for them, you're just one piece to the puzzle.
Yes.
And I think as artists, we tend to get very, at least I do, I'm raising my hand right now, I tend to get very self-focused and I'll wear my heart on my sleeve and take everything personally when really it's not about that at all. I mean, even at the Motorcycle Magazine, I was assistant editor, and you're right. When you mentioned earlier, all the submissions we'd get in, I mean, we would potentially get flooded. And there were plenty of photographers and writers that I didn't get back to, not because I personally disliked them and wanted to ruin their life. It was just, I was busy, you know?
Yeah. That's why I say you've got to be able to have some empathy and put the shoe on the other foot. Try and sit and imagine being at the other end of it. And, you know, you, apart from dealing with photographers, you're obviously dealing with a lot of other things, work day-to-day, office work and dealing with budgets. Yeah. And that's why it's important to keep in front of the people, because, you know, there's a lot of luck involved as well. You know, they're either going to have a job come in and it's thinking, oh, God, yeah, do you remember that middle-aged, bald guy, Simon Plant, who sent that video of himself? I remember his work. He'd be perfect for this job, But, if I only approach them once, I'm just one of hundreds of photographers trying to get attention, and they just get swamped. So you've got to be in it for a long haul and be prepared to hustle and have that continuity.
And I'm trying to remember the average amount of times it takes where you have to reach out to someone before they respond.
They reckon it's 11 touch points now. Great. So that could be made up of direct mailers, email, and phone calls, social networking, whatever. It's about 11 touch points. So, you know, it could, and they reckon a photographer starting up in London, it can take up to 2 to 2.5 years to get your first job.
Wow.
You know, that's what I mean. You know, when you start talking about advertising agencies, it's a minefield, because you may have like 15 buyers, because obviously the industry's changed. It used to be like an art buyer that you would be your point of contact at an agency. Mm-hmm. Well, because of way things have gone, they've got rid of art buyers now. So there could be like 15 different people who did their own buy-in, or it could be one person in production, or it could still be one person who's called an art buyer or something else. So it's a minefield trying to find the right person. Also, people move around quite a lot in the advertising industry, and as I said, you know, you've got a hell's chance of getting them on the phone half the time. And if you want to go in and show your book, not all agencies see books. They'll only perhaps call books in as and when they've got a job on. Or they might say that they've got a drop-off day on a Wednesday. You can drop your book off and leave it with them for a day and then pick it up again. But that defeats the object of actually getting in to see the people. You want the face-to-face time, you know. So nothing's easy, but you know, I always say that anything in life that's worth doing, like in the arts or, you know, maybe acting, singing, music or whatever, it's not going to be easy because everybody wants to do it. So you got to be prepared to hustle. And that's why it's good to have other work coming in while you're building up that work and trying to get these, you know, commissions. It's good to have a revenue stream to help you, you know, live day to day.
It is. And you're right, as far as you really have to first look at what genre you're in and your ideal client and where they are, because it sounds like the Chamber of Commerce was not the right one for fit for you,
not
you know,
me,
and
no.
It's not going to be for everybody. And maybe there's also a difference in, because I'm in the U.S., you know, but for me, it was perfect for building rapport. I'd say even for family photographers or wedding photographers, you know, I'd go to these business networking meetings targeting businesses, and that was great. But I also started getting requests like, do you do weddings? And because these business people had families, so it's a certain fit for certain people, but it all depends on what type of photography you do.
Exactly. Yeah. And I think there's no hard and fast rules, and you know, it's the same as approaching big companies. You know, they're all different, and they've all got different perspectives on photography. And you know, some people are willing to pay thousands of pounds a day for great photography. Mm-hmm. Other people just don't value it, and those are sort of people that are no good to me, because you know I've got certain fees that I need to meet to run a business, and you know, so not everybody's a good fit. So, but you don't know until you try, and that's the thing. But that's why it's important, you know. It's important to keep sending stuff out like I was doing previously, but it's also important that you need to be able to sort of filter those people that are just not appropriate. And sometimes I send them a pack anyway, because I'm thinking, well, I can't get them on the phone. I don't know what they if they're going to use me or not. So I think it's worth the risk. I'll send them a card. I'll send them a little pack. These are little packs I had made. As I said, they're all embossed, and they've got 6 to 8 pictures inside. They're beautifully presented. And I'm thinking, well, if they receive that, I'm pretty sure they're going to open it, because I'm going to wonder what it is. And and it might be enough to thinking, actually, I'll keep this, because I really love what this guy's doing. It's a little bit different, and it's not something we thought about doing before. Or they might just say, yeah, got your cards. Yeah, it's not something we can use, unfortunately. So, you know, you then take them off the database. But you need to try and get some feedback if you can. But, you know, it's really, really difficult, you know, getting people's attention these days, you know, even just to reply to an email.
All right, you have to be consistent with it. You know,
there's
no such thing as an overnight success these days. Not really, anyway.
No, it can happen. You know, you do hear of it, and you can fluke it. But I think you've got to be prepared to be in it for the long term, and to be consistent, as I said. And that's why it's important not to be too fussy. You know, maybe go out and do jobs that you don't particularly want to do. And you know, I'm thinking more of photography. You know, if you can stay within photography, that's great, because still there's something. You know, you're still shooting something, and maybe it's not what you really want to shoot, but it may be something that, you know, at least you're still shooting with a camera and being creative, or rather than going and sort of driving a bus or something part-time, you know. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of opportunities out there for the lower end of the market. You just got to sort of be prepared to not be too proud and go and do it. If it keeps the money coming in and you're still doing your marketing and aiming towards the goal of the work that you want to do, then I think that's absolutely fine, you know.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And you know, I feel like we could talk about this for hours. You know, I love digging into this stuff, but unfortunately we're coming to the end of our podcast, or this episode rather, because they can only be so long. Yeah. And that always makes me sad, coming to the end of an interview.
It's been great. It's been great to have a bit of a rant.
And I wanted to make sure and ask, is there a particular photography resource, tool, online course, book, anything that you would recommend to our listeners to help with their businesses?
Yeah, I mean, I, you know, even being a photographer for 30 odd years, and I've been I've been sort of doing sort of advanced Photoshop now for probably 15 or 20 of those. There's you know, still a lot to learn. There's new software coming out. There's new techniques or new ways of doing things that are better than the old ways. And I just love learning. So I spend a lot of time. There's a couple of sites that I go on now. Obviously, you know, some of the basic stuff that's out there now is obviously I've moved on from that now. So there's not a huge amount of resources out there that do stuff that I'm interested in, you know, new stuff. But there's a couple of sites I go on. One is Flurn. with Aaron Next. He does some crazy stuff. And when I first saw Aaron's videos, I laughed and thought, there's no way you can do that and have it come out any good. And then it just produces amazing pictures. And I'm thinking, my God, I'd be spending like hours analyzing. and I just realized that maybe I was overthinking things, because he does some crazy, crazy things. So I've learned a lot of little tips from watching his videos. So definitely flern.com, I think it is, is a great resource for post-production. Another one I love, and I love their podcast, is RGGEDU. Rob Grimm? Is it Rob Grimm, I think? The food photographer. He's got an education site. They do some free podcasts, but they also interviews with photographers and stuff. But they also do a lot of training videos. They're not cheap. They're not cheap at all, but I've bought quite a few of them, and some of the stuff that I've picked up have been really, really worthwhile, really worth the money. And so that's a good resource. Again, I don't buy them every month, because there's always only certain things I might be interested in that I think might be a benefit to me. But, you know, every day is a school day. You never stop learning, and it keeps things fun.
So true. And I'll make sure to include links to those resources in the show notes. For sure. And Simon, my final question, but one of the most important, tell us where we can find you online.
Well, I'm on Instagram. I think it's Simon Plant Photo. I'm also on Twitter, the same handle, although I don't use Twitter as much as I used to. I've fallen out of love with that. the main place you can find all the links to is obviously on my website, which is simonplant.co.uk.
Excellent, excellent. And thank you again, Simon, for chatting with us. This has been really cool.
It's been great to talk to you, and thanks for inviting me on.
If you're enjoying this podcast, I ask that you please leave a review on iTunes or Stitcher or wherever you're listening. The more reviews we get, the easier it is for people to find this podcast in search rankings. We want to reach as many people as possible and help improve our photo industry. I appreciate you all. Thanks for listening.